if you're a designer, it's your work to be that bridge that connects everything together, because you are the one with probably the visual skills to enhance on what someone's thinking, and also the one with the translation skills to make it technology for the for those that need to build it.
Hi guys, welcome to Design League, and today we have a special guest. His name is Bruno from Portugal. So hi Bruno.
Hi Dan, how are you?
Yeah, great. So Bruno, I mean, like, tell us about what you do, and then how you got yourself into the design industry.
Hey, so what I do? I'm a head designer at the creatives team at a company called OutSystems here in Portugal, which is a company that works on a technology called low-code development, which is basically visual coding and enhanced coding, if you want to say it like that. How do I got into the industry? Well, I kind of had a boring path, if you want to call it like that. I kind of just went to college and got myself a degree. I actually didn't study, I studied like a very broad side of design. I studied on multimedia design. So I kind of got on a degree that was like, you would just do graphic, you would do video, audio, animation, programming, a little bit of UX and UI. So I kind of got like a good basis degree, but I never went for more than that because I kind of started working as I was in college, spent a few years freelancing, and eventually when things weren't going really well at freelancing, I just got a job at OutSystems by the luckiest luck of all, let's put it like that, I would say also. I've been working here for a few years now. Started as a junior and kind of built up the team as the company grew. And nowadays I'm the lead brand designer on the creative team.
Awesome. How many people do you handle, like, in your team?
So my side of the team, so we're actually a large team. On my side of the team, I have 7 designers. I work with a lot of other design leaders in the company. The company itself has around 60 right now. There's like no one head of design for everyone, but we work as a core lead team trying to make the design organization grow, which is actually a quite interesting phase. When companies start to grow from having small distributed teams to understanding, well, there's a lot of people working on this area, we should probably kind of create an organization to it. And it has been fun, but yeah, under my care, I have 7 people. No, wait, 6, 7, it's me, sorry.
Okay, that's fine.
Which are not designers only. I also have a couple of video editors and motion artists working with me. But that's more or less the structure of how things work with our company.
Let's see. So you mentioned that the company you work at, they do visual coding.
Yeah.
Can you please tell us more about
elaborate.
That? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So OutSystems is actually one of the oldest companies doing that in the market. We're almost getting a 20-year right now, like, company existence. The term visual coding is like the most long-lasting one, because most of it kind of the industry names were different. For a few years it was called rapid application development. Nowadays we call it low code and no code, right? Very much like other companies that exist on the market. Like, for designers, I think some of the things like Webflow would be the most immediate comparison. But OutSystems is more focused on app development. Or a lot of work to be done on web and mobile apps. And basically what you do is you abstract code into visual thinking. So instead of writing 2,000 lines of code, you're probably gonna design a diagram which kind of explains the logic, like start here and then if this then that. And it's just designing a little diagram that recodes everything for you. And the cool part about our product is when you finish everything you want to build there, and you have the ability to work not just on design, but also on the databases, on the logic, the full UI, the animations, all you can do all of that in there. And when you publish, you immediately get an app built for either web or for mobile pre-constructed for both Android and iOS. So it's really, really cool as a product. And we started having one tool. We're now growing into having a full suite of tools, very much like an Adobe, but for coding. So it's starting to be an amazing company to see grow and become more and more interesting as it kind of scales.
Yeah, awesome. So I mean, how's your typical day like? How's your typical day like heading a team? I mean, with, let's say, is there any processes? Is there any tools that you use?
There's a lot of different days, I would say. It depends on the, yeah, depends a lot on the season. Like if it's harder, where you have a lot of work to do, and even I need to just jump in and start doing the nitty gritty day-to-day work and building stuff. But most of the times we kind of have a really good structure. Our team is actually part of an extended team that also has the web part with some website content creators and SEO people, copywriters. So we also have a couple of program managers that help me do my job and my other team lead friend on the website, let's put it like that. And they kind of help us streamline that. But my day today would be like every morning we have a scrum alignment with the team. Then that starts the day. It's a little bit after we start the day. Then most of my day would be doing some creative direction or even working on some of the more major tasks that the company kind of has, like the major deliverables. Right now we're working for our customer conference. So I'm 3 weeks in on producing virtual keynotes, so recording stuff on the office with my video team, editing it, creating the whole graphics and motion. So I'm working more on the communications part at this point. But that also meant like last year by this time I was redoing an entire design system and a website with my UX guy. In a couple of months, like recreating a brand, a design system, and the entire website of the company in 2 months. So it can be a lot of different things. But most of the days, it starts with Scrum, where everyone aligns on what's next. Our program managers and project managers help us understand how many strings attached to our work there is. And then I kind of do my stuff, but mostly help others finish their works and kind of give direction. There's also a couple of meetings and whatever that comes with the part of being a lead or a manager job. And every week I have a lot of one-on-ones with everyone on my team. So that's also a very important part of being a lead that I think sometimes you don't think about, but the human part, you know, not just leading the doing and the creative part, but also understanding how people are, understanding if they're okay with their jobs or not. Like, so there's a lot of that too, to the day-to-day of a lead designer, let's put it like that. And some training. I also do a lot of training because I'm the tech geek in my team specifically. Like I'm that guy that knows all the tools, all the nitty-gritty. I'm just nerdy to that point. And there's a lot of training to do that too.
So how did the pandemic affect the company?
How did COVID and the pandemic itself affected the company? So we got sent home to work from home since March, but well, financially wise, let's put it like that, we are at the best place. And that's really bad to say, but it's the truth. Like companies all of a sudden understood that they were not digital, and we help people build their digital products faster because they don't have to spend hours coding. So it kind of went well. Everyone went to work from home, and we keep hiring every month new people. I think we hired from March till now about 100 people, and we worked from home really well. Everyone kind of pre-prepared everything that we had. So to the point that we're now reevaluating, like in September, we're reevaluating if we're not actually going remote first as a company and start to work mostly from home, which is actually a major deal on a company that's almost 20 years old and has offices all around the world. And everyone, although we have a lot of remote workers, we kind of always pushed for a less remote first initiative. But it went well. We had to change some of those dynamics that you have on the office. like if you work on a creatives team specifically, yep, not just design overall, but on creatives, you got a lot of like wording going back and forth, and then hey, can you just come here and help me figure this out, or let's flash out and do some brainstorm on a new campaign or on a new product. Mm-hmm. So when you want to do that, but there's still a screen in the middle, it kind of breaks a lot of things. So we got a ways around it. We got like collaboration tools, like the ones that we used before, but we started using it more on the remote side, and it worked really well, like Figma and Miro. Lots of Zoom calls, like lots of Zoom calls. And it kind of went well. I'm now going back to the office just to do stuff, like I said, like the recordings of the keynotes and stuff like that. But most of the work is still being done virtually, and everyone at their homes, with making sure that we have syncs every day, making sure that we have moments to chill out with each other sometimes, even yeah, just we like Bureau Clock Friday. So we kind of get 5 p.m. Friday, everyone is allowed to get a beer, get in front of a Zoom call, then we just lash out and laugh with each other. So it kind of recreated the workplace dynamics, but where we are, like we're at home. Okay, that's our situation right now. We can't change it. So let's make the best out of it and like try not to go crazy. Let's put it like that.
Also, I mean, like I tried Miro, the app, and it was really, really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, with my team. And basically sometimes we do lots of Zoom calls, and then sometimes we do Google Hangout calls too.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is great. So yeah, so I mean, you mentioned that you do trainings too, right?
I do a lot of training, yes.
Yeah. So is it always on a particular project, or is basically like a particular topic that you would want your colleagues to know about?
There's a few sides to it. So the technology training is something that had to happen because we kind of shifted the whole way that we work. Even as a creative nowadays, most people still are pretty stuck to the Adobe Cloud suite and stuff like that. We do use Adobe a lot, but for example, most of our work right now is done in Figma because it's a collaborative tool. It runs on the browser. It's way easier to use, and I can jump into a file with one of my juniors and kind of just go and on a Zoom call talking with each other like we are now, like on the, like just listening to each other, feel like you're side by side in an office and kind of collaborating, creating things. And Adobe didn't have that much. So I got a lot of work to do on that part, on collaborative tools, or even in digital tools that are everyone nowadays used, but still lack some training, like Google Suite, Docs, Slides. So I got a lot of training on that end, where I kind of train people not just to use the products correctly, for example, for non-designers, which is something that I do a lot in my company, training for non-designers, but for designers, I do train them on how to push beyond the regular things you would expect from some of those products. Yeah, and I teach designs to train, I teach and I train the designers to use tools like Google Slides or Google Docs beyond the regular use you would expect from tools like this, or Microsoft Word or PowerPoint. But well, we use G Suite here, so that's my baseline there. And what I try to teach them is to how to use those tools, including, for example, Google Slides as design tools, because they are the middle ground. If we want to get and talk with someone on the business side of, and someone on a C-level, they're most easily jump into a Google Doc or a Google Slide and lash out content with you and see you design there and work with you there than specifically on a design tool. We got a lot of adoption on Figma too, because it feels natural for people to use it like that. Miro, same thing, but Figma actually most, because it was easier in some ways. But you can see that these tools are underused as this mean of communication between teams. So I give a lot of training on that. And at the end of the day, I also do a lot of brand training, because since I my team and myself created the brand and set the baseline to what it is. And we actually, on that project that I was mentioning from last year, on those 2 or 4 months that we had for brand, website, and whatever, we did a lot of work even on the way that people should think about the brand or talk about the brand. So we really need to infuse that in people's minds when they come to the company, when they join the company, or even if it's an external agency, which is something that we are starting to use more and more. So I tend to give a lot of various training on these different things, but the ones that I still love the most and the most challenging are instilling some design thoughts in non-designers, helping people that are non-designers understand how we think and get them into the mood. Like a lot of how Hideo does with design thinking and a lot of those tools, but helping people kind of understand us so that we can understand them better too and collaborate better. That's that one like huge project, let's put it like that, that I have, is to get that working so well that in out systems or wherever I work in any future, we could all work together more collaboratively and not just complain about each other, which is something that happens a lot. Like business versus technology is something that happens a lot. And design is on the verge on in that little middle ground where technologists kind of understand design as their own thing, but business guys also kind of understand design as their own thing. Like, because it's more understandable. I really like how we could use that gap to reduce the gap or to bridge those things together.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically true. I think one thing I've seen is that in these cases, some designers tend to go to the route of what you call it, explaining the benefits of these business people using that technology.
Yeah, and even what happens is you really expect people to do the extra work and use your tools, but you need to expect people to be a little bit lazy. I guess that's it. Like, we are lazy with our tools. We always, all of us, always want to use whatever it's easy for you, for us. If we have something that we really just don't have the time to, or don't think we have the time to learn, we don't do it. So don't expect other people to be different from us. Don't expect other people to just have to learn what you learn because you are better in some way. No, like everyone has their own way to work. And for example, I love the tools that I use today, but probably if you told me 2 or 3 years ago what was the best tool in the market, I would say to you Adobe Illustrator because it was what did the job for me.
Yeah.
But the fact is that if you look at things, right, nowadays people call me Fig nerd because I just blab about Figma because that's my tool, that main tool now. But that doesn't mean that in 5 or 10 years it will still be that. Sure. It depends a lot on how things change. So you really need to understand beyond tools and beyond what people need, more like what people want to do, and give them that middle ground. And that's always hard for anyone to think about it. And I sometimes think even more designers, because we as designers, and if it's product designers, it's a little bit different, I would say, because it's an area where people are already taught that you should listen more to the customer. Yeah. You should know more about what the other end is saying. But graphic designers and creatives have been pushed their whole lives to the idea that they are the top notch guy in the room. They are the ones that know it all. And that's bad. Like, if they don't teach you to listen to others and understand how to work side by side with others, that's bad. But like, creative agencies were built in a way that, like, and this is a very European or American centric vision, but it's true. It's like, creative agencies were built on the top of that idea of the big old white dude that had it all figured out. And he was shouting out ideas with a glass of whiskey, and everyone should know that he was the guy that knew things. He didn't listen to the customers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that always felt hard to me. So I really want to gap that idea of how can people work together. That's always been, like, ever since I got a little bit of a management or a leadership role, all I wanted was to help my teams collaborate better with other teams, with other stakeholders, and help them bridge this gap, either by tools, which is still my specialty because I'm very much a technologist guy, or by communication means, like processes or the way that you do things by messages and or alignment. Like, using tools always helps that. And the fact is, we kind of build tools around this. Everyone has their own set. If you want to manage things, there's people like us who use Asana and Jira. There's people who use Trello. There's people who use Monday.com, whatever. But tools are always going to be there for you to do it. You just need to know what you want to do and how you want to do it. And then you adapt the tools to it. And I really believe that that's the hardest part of being any type of design.
Yeah, I mean,
anything. Let's put it like that. Like, I was going to say design lead, but in the any point is going to be like, if you're a designer, it's your work to be that bridge that connects everything together, because you are the one with probably the visual skills to enhance on what someone's thinking, and also the one with the translation skills to make it technology for the for those that need to build it.
I think for me, I think it really hasn't been that successful because lots of designers are always stuck in their bubble. And it's like, they just want to do what they think is right. And I've always said that there's a major difference between a good design and a great design, right? So you can't just do a nice design and then which has no impact. And then you expect people to say that it's a great design, you know?
Yeah. And overall, if you look at things, like, I come from a place where design was art in a certain way. When you come as a communicator and you work at a level where you're doing graphic design, like, if you feed a brand, you feed a brand. But if you do a poster, can be art, you know? I worked a lot with culture and music in the early days of starting to work, and still do nowadays. I still have a lot of connections with stuff like musical projects. And I used to run music shows for a worldwide project called So Far Sound back in the town that I studied in, not my hometown, but wherever. So, and when I did that, when I worked with those fields, it kind of feels like when you're communicating, you're not just communicating, but you're also trying to be a little bit more artsy. And I think that's where design comes from, but it needs to move out of that, because we moved into the service design part of things, where you actually, there's a lot of work that's still gonna be done there, and the artists are still gonna have their spot. There's gonna be designers out there that are gonna be known because they have a certain style and they are creative in a certain way. But then most of the design work is gonna be more unnoticeable.
Yeah.
Gonna be mostly like done to make products and make products that fit needs on markets and people understand those products. And the fact is, unless it's purposely noticeable, as in design that fits that art spectrum, most design should be unnoticeable. And if you notice something about the design of a tool or a process, most likely that's because it's badly designed. Because it's kind of caught. If you look at it, if you use an app, you're never going to remember just the good things of the app, or either it's like a brilliant new experience, or it's like that one thing that got your eye, like, why doesn't this work like I thought it would? So that's always when it comes, like that little details, those little details that were taught to work well will probably work so well that no one will notice them. And that's what great design sometimes is about. If you look, and we look at it as product designers in digital world, but man, the 70s, the 50s, the 60s, where product designers were actually industrial designers building objects, those guys did that to our lives a lot. We use beds, we use lamps, we use, I don't know, mugs, chairs that were designed by people that made those things feel great and unnoticeable at a certain point. They can look beautiful, yes, but a comfortable chair is good because it's a comfortable chair. You start noticing it more when it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the same should be applied to digital products. You need to understand that we're building things that, yes, can look great, can be beautiful, but they need to work well and they need to be more noticeable on the functional part of things.
Right. Great. I'm just going to ask you, one last question. So what has been the major challenge working, what you call it, remotely with your team?
Human connection would be the major challenge, actually. So I think we got to a point where if you did it well, if you have good processes, they work in any work situation. Okay. So if you're at the office or not, if you have a good process, aligned with? How do you get your copy, and how do you talk with people? And even adjusting those communication processes, like, okay, you're not in the office, but you have a Slack channel open or a Teams channel open just to speak with your team or your stakeholders constantly, that kind of fixes it. But then that human connection, that understanding, and understanding the even your intentions emotionally, like if you're talking with someone through a Zoom call, if you don't, or whatever call, a video call, if you don't turn on your camera, you already lost half of the communication.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that go untranslated. And for me, I think that's the major difficulty, is like translating your intentions to something written or something said. Well, if you listen is already better, but just something written. A written message will never carry excitement. That will never carry, or for it to carry true excitement, you need to go deep into the words meaning of your message, right? You need to make sure that people understand, well, this is great or something like that. Mm. But that's the hardest part, I would say, is like making sure that you keep having those little details on human connection, you know, that you keep being able to understand your team and understand you, and all kind of work together in a way that it's beneficial for everyone.
So, I mean, with this, I mean, I'm guessing you would prefer working, I mean, like going to the office as in working with your team in a room or like a specific place.
Yeah, so I love that. I'm an office guy, not an office per se, but like a workplace guy, let's put it like that. I spent years working in coffee shops. I still do it a lot. Like, I love the buzz of being in a place where you have people around you. Mm. So whenever I can, even though I work full time at a place that has an office, every time I have a freelance work to do, or sometimes that now that I'm remote, since we actually got the space to do so in Portugal, I kind of don't want to work at home because I know that I'm gonna be out of focus. I prefer to be headphones on, but on a place that has a lot of buzz around me, because it feels right. But still, I know that I need to adapt to the remote work. I think it's all about also finding what works best for you, even if you're working remotely. Because yes, you're like, if you have a small home or something, sometimes it's hard, but if you can find solutions, then I know that this is not the same for everyone. I know that like, it's also a lot of an European and American and whatever Western view of these things. But the fact is, like, if you go out in Portugal to the streets, it's most likely any shop is gonna have an internet connection. So if you stop at the coffee, if you stop at the library, if you stop in the public park, you have Wi-Fi or you have 4G. So you don't really lose the connection to wherever you work with. The only thing you might lose the connection to is an electrical plug. That's it. Your phone has a battery, your tablet has a battery, your laptop has a battery, whatever you use to work needs electricity. Outside of that, you can do almost anything anywhere because you have data flowing anywhere, Wi-Fi flowing anywhere, so it's okay. So I believe that what's going to happen, and this is something that has been happening for a while now, and like remote workers, and even the whole talk that we had a few years ago that still goes on about digital nomads are going to be the thing that's happened in the future. Like AI and automation are reducing a lot of work that it's like the regular
work
that no one wants to do.
Yeah.
So you're going to end up having work that you can do anywhere, because it's going to be mostly about thinkers and creators and less about crafters. And you're not going to lose the crafters. You're not going to lose those guys or those people overall that can just go in and build something with their own hands or have processes or even be artisans, you know? That's never going to be lost, because we still value that a lot. But there's a lot of like mass production work and stuff like that. It's going to be automated. Even on design, we need to be aware that like UI and UX, we created so many patterns. We created so many things that if we feed them into a machine can build it.
Yeah.
You know, because in the end of the day, there's a lot of recognizable patterns that machines can build for digital interfaces, because it's their domain. And I think that when you get to a point where all of this kind of gets you to the place where your job is to think and creatively build solutions, then it's better that you just adapt to the environment you are to better be a producer of those things. So working from home for me, depending on where I am, like my home in Lisbon is not very big. I have like a living room that is the living room slash office. And if there's anyone at home that wants to like sit on the couch and I'm having a Zoom call on the side, I'm going to be an inconvenience to them and they're going to be an inconvenience to me. So if I have like an afternoon that I can just sit at a coffee shop, sip on a coffee and work, then probably that's going to be how I work better. So I think everyone can just find their little spot where they feel comfortable to work on. If it's at home and they don't have any other chances, I know that happens a lot. Well, try to make your home as most the place that you need, I would say.
Yeah.
If you need to do something around you to just get you like, this is comfortable, this or this is like what I need to be challenged or excited. I don't know, even something as putting posters on your wall or having the books that you know that have the answers to your questions on top of the desk, that can change a lot. To me, that does a lot of that. Like I have a couple of small books that I don't read a lot, that's for sure. But the ones that I read, I like them a lot. I used to read a lot. Nowadays, I think I read a lot of articles, a little less books. But I like those books on my side because sometimes I kind of like, if I feel blocked, I just open them, go to a different page and find ideas and solutions there. So it's going to be all about mechanisms and understanding what works best for you. And if you feel like you're missing people, then probably you're going to need to figure out if the place that you work with, or even if the place where you work on, can give you that sense of being with someone and lashing out ideas or something.
Great. Okay, so Bruno, just tell our listeners where they can reach out to you, where they can, you know, in case they need some information, yeah, basically like on design and stuff. I mean, which, what do you call it, platforms, can they reach out to you?
Yeah, so best thing would be still Twitter. Twitter at bfigas, F-I-G-A-S, would be the best place to find me. Well, actually, it's B-F-I-G-A-S underscore, because someone has the one without the underscore and they don't use it, but I'm still going to get that one. Mm-hmm. But if you look at any channel, Dribbble, Instagram, Vesco, the photography thing, I'm that's my handle everywhere, so you can easily find me, bfigas. And that's it. I think I'm always open to talk with anyone that comes at me with a suggestion, with a question, with whatever. And also, if you guys ever want to join some of the cool design communities that I'm also on Slack, I can get you guys in. Because that's also a different channel to talk on, and sometimes even open up opportunities and doors to different.
Yeah, the Slack communities, right?
Sorry?
The Slack communities.
Yeah, the Slack communities, yes. So there's a lot of them nowadays. Slack, Discord, whatever feels best. There's incredible design communities that started joining people from around the globe. I would say many of them are tech because, well, the guys from San Francisco and the Silicon Valley kind of pushed that to happen. But it still has a lot of good stuff in it. And there are millions of active communities around the world that you can just join and get your answers to. I'm on probably 10 different Slack and Discord groups right now. I'm filled with information every day. I see projects from everyone and it's awesome. And I am also open on those channels to just talk to whoever wants to talk to me and need some answers solved. So whatever I can do to help, or they can do to help me, because I also reach out to a lot of people, I just do it. You should never be afraid to talk with someone that you want to talk with.
Yeah,
that's,
sure.
That's actually something that I said.
Yeah. Okay, great. Bruno, thanks for making time for us today. And
you're welcome.
Yeah, we have actually learned
a lot. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, from you. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, thank you very much. And then I guess we'll just catch up later.
Yeah, I'm good.